In the 1970s, children around the Midwest turned up missing, only to be found dead. In August of 1976, 9-year-old Mark Helmig of Pekin, Illinois, was one of them.
We had a report of a young boy missing from the public housing out on Broadway Street in Pekin. That housing sets right next to the across the street from the railroad tracks and a big turntable out there, switch yards. And then across that is the city park, Mineral Springs City Park. During that time, there was a 4-H fair going on at the park. He asked his mother to go to the park, and she wouldn't let him. He was supposed to go to Canton to a summer camp. He ran away from home. He went over to the 4-H fairs and was seen by about 2 or 3 different witnesses over there. But when he didn't show up that night, his mother got concerned and called us, and we started to search for him during that period of time. We swarmed the area with every cop we had, and we searched everything we could search out there. We searched the boxcars. We searched the 4-H fairgrounds. We followed every lead that we could follow out there.
9-year-old Mark Helmig from Pekin, Illinois, had been missing for 23 days when his body was found in a boxcar in a train yard in the neighboring city of East Peoria.
The workers in the switch yards in East Peoria on the south end had found what they thought was the body of a young boy in a boxcar over there. So our investigators went to that place, and the body had been there for several days. It was in pretty rough shape, and it was the body of a young boy. They were able to determine that, in fact, it was young Mark Helmig that we were looking for. So now we did not have a missing boy. We had a murder on our hands.
But there was another unsolved case in the city of Pekin, Illinois. 4 years earlier, in January of 1972, 13-year-old Richard Greiner was reported missing after being last seen sledding down the high school hill in the park. He was never seen again, and a body has never been recovered. Investigators originally believed these two cases could be related.
In 1976, when Mark Helmig disappeared, we had two missing cases at that time. We had Richard Greiner from 72 and Mark. Now, they lived close together. They lived within 3 blocks of each other. They disappeared within 300 yards of each other. So therefore, we begin to think that we had one suspect, and that's the way we looked at it for a while.
Investigators later determined that although eerily similar, the two cases were not related.
And that leaves the Richard Greiner case still open. Even after all of these years, if there's anybody out there that has any information about the disappearance of Richard Greiner in 1972, you call your local police department and give them that information, and we'll keep going on this case until we either, one, we find him alive, or we find his body and then find his killer.
The investigation into the Mark Helmig case soon moved in another direction. 40 miles to the east in Bloomington, Normal, Illinois, Dan Sadler of the Normal Police Department works a similar case.
I was a detective sergeant in 1978 when we discovered a badly decomposed body of a young person in the northwest side of Normal. The location was a brushed over area near the railroad tracks, near the underpass of Division Street. Now, Normal is twin cities with Bloomington. It's a Bloomington-Normal only divided by a Division Street. The next morning, we contacted Bloomington PD and discovered that they had a 14-year-old boy by the name of Marty Lancaster that was missing. As it turned out, that was Marty Lancaster's body that we found, but we did not identify him until the following evening through dental records because of the decomposition of the body was so bad. After that, we began an intensive investigation. We ran into many false leads that led us to Lake Bloomington looking for a bicycle. And ultimately, we found the bicycle laying in a stream. This was the bicycle that Marty Lancaster had left his house on in that first week of July of 78. And he was going fishing down near the gravel pits, which was close to the railroad tracks. In proximity to the scene where we found the body, we found what appeared to be some chili cans where someone had maybe spent the night or had spent time there eating. Now, one other important thing, and that'll come to light later, is the fact that Marty Lancaster left his house on a bicycle. Tied to the handlebars was a fishing stringer. Now, it appeared that his hands had been tied behind him with that fishing stringer. Now, we also had a photograph of Marty Lancaster standing next to his bicycle with the fishing stringer on the handlebars.
1978, I was promoted to the detective division in Pekin Police Department, and I started again to research all of the cases that we had, unsolved cases. And Mark Helmick was one of them. We ran up a few clues, and we couldn't find anything, so we put out a big dispatch in 1979, and we were looking for any similar cases where young boys may have disappeared from state fairgrounds or railroad tracks nearby, any playground or anything of that nature. And we were swamped, I mean swamped, with calls coming in from all over the country. And by the time we got them together, we figured that we had the MO on about 9 different states, in which we then decided we'd better get together in one place and have an investigation into it, see what we had, and see if we could determine if we had a suspect.
Well, immediately we contacted Detective Conover and started a conversation with him. And he had been in contact with Lincoln, Nebraska Police Department, who had had a suspect in 2 boys being murdered in their city.
We called a meeting of the intelligence bunch out in Topeka, Kansas, and there we had agents from 9 different states that showed up, and together our cases were extremely familiar.
Gentlemen, for those of you I haven't met, I'm Sergeant Jim Conover of the Pekin, Illinois Police Department. To my right is Sergeant Mogi. He's been working with Sergeant Dan Sadler of the Bloomington Normal Police Department, and I on a series of kidnappings and murders throughout the Midwest. On August 1st, 1976, 9-year-old Mark Helmig, against his mother's wishes, attended the county 4-H fair in Pekin, but he did have to cross some railroad tracks and go through some woods. Mark never returned home. We never found a killer, although we can place a William J. Freight Train Gwantney, who's a hobo that travels the rails, at the 4-H fair at the same time. Sergeant Mogi?
Why don't you tell them about the other cases in and around Illinois?
We received calls and teletypes about many young boys. A Jeff Ramsey found murdered in Rock Island, a Michael Abnick in Fort Madison, Iowa. Both cases similar to ours, both on or near railroad tracks. We had a Chris Francis. His body was never found. Although Gwatney can be seen getting out of jail in Santa Rosa, which is just a few miles away, headed south toward Chandler, Arizona, which by coincidence had 3 young Native American boys found stabbed to death, again, near or on railroad tracks.
Gentlemen, all of you are here today because you work in similar cases in your cities. What we have here is a 12-year-old boy named John Hanrahan, who was last seen at a bowling alley playing a pinball machine and drinking a Pepsi, according to the waitress that works there. She also told us about a hobo-looking gentleman that was sitting at the counter eating a hamburger. She told us that the hobo left just before Hanrahan left. That was the last time Hanrahan was seen until his body was found badly beaten and floating in a creek several miles away. We also noticed that the creek runs right along some railroad tracks. We showed the waitress a picture of Gauntney, and she positively identified him as the man sitting at the counter eating the hamburger. The VA hospital is only 1 block away from the bowling alley. The creek where Hanrahan was found borders a ranch that Gauntney worked at for many years.
I'm Noah Van Butzel of the Lincoln, Nebraska Police Department. We started our case in 1975 when 2 young boys, Jacob Server, age 12, and John Simpson, age 13, disappeared from the state fairgrounds on August
30th. I'm Special Agent Young of the Kansas Bureau, Topeka, Kansas. Our case started July 13th, 1976. Charles J. Hefner, 7-year-old boy,
I'm Captain Gifford of the Nebraska State Police. We had a case in Omaha of a young boy, Jay Durnell, age 12. He disappeared on April 29th.
Sergeant Dan Sadler here of the Normal, Illinois Police Department. My case involves a young boy, 14 years old, named Marty Lancaster. Marty lived in Bloomington, our Twin City, but it's my case because he was found in Normal. The boy's body was found near the creek, close to the railroad tracks. It was covered in debris.
A year later, we developed a suspect. He was a hobo who worked the state fairs, and he hopped the freights to go to one place to the other. And that was William J. Gutney. He had been seen with two boys on a railroad track at the fair.
His clothing was scattered all around, except for one shoe. The pool was close to the railroad tracks and only 30 miles from where Gotney lives in Neal Shore Falls, Kansas. It was also only 25 miles from where the young boy's body was found. Gotney is the only suspect we have.
It was a skull fracture. We also found an area near some old telephone posts where somebody had been staying. We were later able to put Gotney in town around the time of the boy's disappearance.
He told his mother that he was going to meet a new friend who was helping him build a treehouse along the bank of the Elkhorn River. Well, we found his bicycle in the Elkhorn River. We found his body in the Missouri River on May 19th, 1976. The cause of death was a fractured skull, and after we got the information on Gotney, we, the state police and the Omaha police, did some checking, and we found that Gotney was in Omaha at a mission on the date of the boy's disappearance.
Gentlemen, my chief sent a request to the VA hospital in Topeka for us to review Gotney's medical records. Meeting's been set with the superintendent of records for 3 o'clock today, so I suggest we get heading that direction.
Gotney received medication 3 to 4 times a day, all the way up until this date. But then he received no medication from March 16th until May 9th, 1976, until he returned to the hospital emergency room with an infected bug bite some 23 days later.
I can tell you that Gotney was not in the hospital those 23 days when he was AWOL.
Okay, well, your records say that he was still in the hospital.
Sergeant Conover, we carry a patient 2 to 3 weeks after a patient goes AWOL or runs off.
Okay, well, correct records would sure have helped us in the Jay Durnhill case from Omaha, Nebraska. They took Gwantney off the suspect list because your records showed that he was here at the hospital.
Looking for Jim Conover, Detective Jim Conover.
You found him. What can I do for you?
Ron Hearn, Omaha, Nebraska. Talked to you on the phone about my Jay Durnhill case.
Yeah, Ron, I remember that. You were going to send me something in the mail.
Yep, sure was, but decided to come in person. Here I am.
I'll see you, Ron.
Ron had some information for me on his autopsy report, and he was supposed to send it to me. But as it happened, Ron decided he was going to carry it, hand carry it, because he wanted to talk to me more about the case.
What are we looking at?
That is an autopsy report from our victim, Jay Durnell. He died from a blow to the side of his head.
Yeah, it says here the blow was caused by something with a sharp edge. It says it was the murder weapon was half round, sharp object with measurements of 5 centimeters across, 2.5 centimeters deep with a flat handle.
I studied it for a minute or so, and then I thought, well, wait a minute. I know one thing it could be. Many years ago, I worked on the railroad. And so I got up and left the desk, went down to my chief's office, because I remembered that the chief had a paperweight that was gold-colored, and it was a railroad spike. So I grabbed the spike, and of course he didn't like that too well, but he said, make sure it gets back here. And after promising him I did, I went back and talked to Ron Hearn, and I showed him that, and we sat and measured it. I did the measurements on it, and guess what? It was a half-round, sharp object. On the end of it, it was 5 centimeters across, 2.5 centimeters deep with a flat handle. We were both positive at that time that we had the murder weapon of Jay Darnell, the young boy that was found in the Missouri River.
What you're looking at here, Ron, is your murder weapon, a railroad spike.
We know that our suspect, William Freight Train Gotney, carried a railroad spike for protection. But we were sure that we had the murder weapon because when we got William Freight Train Gotney in the end, he was carrying, he had a pair of coveralls with a railroad spike in the pocket of it. William Gotney, he had a nickname of Freight Train. And he got his nickname by hopping the freights all the time. He was a hobo.
The reason of the nickname was he rode the rails. He could make a whistle like a freight train sound just like you were standing next to a freight train.
It's quite loud, and the kids all loved him. And... travel. He knew every train there was. He knew what time they left a certain area here in the Midwest, and he would be in California. In 2 days, he could be in California out there in Riverside or someplace because he knew every train. He knew the names of every one of the rail lines. So Freight Train was actually a hobo.
The hobo would use railroad means of travel. As we know through history, the hobo would travel the width and the breadth of this country by a rail, and actually not ride the passenger trains, but actually riding freight trains. And the case being that they would ride in boxcars, or the design of the rail car had what they call a rod supporting the frame underneath the boxcar, which they'd ride the rods underneath the boxcar.
He was just drank all the time. That's one of the things he was always capable of. And he always had a bottle somewhere, hidden someplace. He sang, he danced, he did imitations of young babies crying. He did imitations of car horns. He did imitations of freight trains, and that's where he's got his name at. But if you found a fairgrounds, you would usually find William Freight Train Gotney.
I thought you wanted to ride a train.
I do.
Look what I got. You like licorice? Come on, let's go ride that train.
We talked to two young boys here in town. They told us that they had seen Mark Helmick talking to a hobo on the railroad tracks. The hobo was drinking wine. They also said they stopped and talked to him.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Jimmy. Want to go on a train ride with us?
You going on a train?
Yeah, he's taking me to Peoria on a train.
Where are you going to take Mark?
I'm going to take him on a train ride.
Want to come with us?
I ain't going on no train.
Me neither. Come on, Jimmy. We'd better head on home.
These kids came forward and told us about this. And we interviewed him, and they gave us quite a bit of information. He gave them the perfect description of Gotney. And yet we stayed, you know, we didn't know for sure that we were getting the right information from him. And then when we interviewed Gotney, he said that when he was asked, did you see anybody else with, when you were talking to Mark Helmick on the railroad tracks? He said, yeah, he talked to two other boys, and they asked about going for a ride on a freight train.
In July of 1977, 60 miles south, the Sangamon County Sheriff's Office investigates the disappearance and murder of another young boy.
The Sheriff's Department received a report of a missing 13-year-old boy. That boy was later identified as Robbie Mann from Riverton, Illinois. 13 days later, the badly decomposed body of Robbie Mann was found in the backwaters of the river along US 36. There was a river bridge that traversed the river both along the highway and the railroad tracks. At the time that Robbie was discovered, His bicycle had been found along the roadway at the edge of the bridge. The young man was clad only in underwear, and due to the bad state of decomposition, the coroner's office was unable to determine the actual cause of death. There was some suspicion that perhaps Robbie had actually been thrown from the bridge.
I received information from railroad detectives that Guatney was in northern Illinois, and it looked like he was starting to move south, which would have been towards Springfield.
It wasn't until July of 1979, after I had returned to the Detective Bureau, did I become aware of information about Robbie Mann. And it was limited information at that point, and due to other caseload, I was not able to do a whole lot with that until I met Jim Conover at our offices at the Sangamon County Sheriff's Department. It was at that time that Detective Conover of the Pekin Police Department expressed a deep concern with some valid information concerning some serial killer that perhaps was working the Illinois State Fair, which was going on at that time in Springfield, Illinois.
We knew where Guatney was. First, the railroad detectives noted that he was in Dwight, Illinois. Then he was in Pontiac, which meant he was moving south towards Springfield, Illinois, and the State Fair.
So we arranged to have a big, big surveillance on this guy at Springfield State Fairgrounds.
And our intention was we hoped we would maybe see something, find someone to talk with that could give us more information concerning Guatney and anything that might be related to any boys, missing boys, or possibly any future problems that they may run into.
And when he reached the fairgrounds, then we began our surveillance down there. We followed that man for the first 2 days, and all he did was drink and imitate a freight train as he walked around the fairgrounds. And we never saw him do any kind of work, really, but we followed him around down there. And then, on the second day of the operation, the surveillance on him, we watched him early in the morning. Young boy rode up to him on a bicycle, and he started talking to the young boy, said something to him real nice, and then he started walking him off down away from where he was at toward the railroad tracks, which was 2 blocks away. And we knew he had a shanty down on the railroad tracks, so we began following them two and had plans that the minute they hit the railroad, we were going to arrest Guatney for the attempted kidnapping of a young boy. Luckily, the boy's father was paying attention.
Hey, where are you going with my son? You, come with me. And you, get the hell out of here.
Now, we called that young boy Lucky Boy X because he was fortunate his daddy saw him and fortunate we were watching him, or he may have been another victim of William Freight Train Gottney's.
Through information developed during the surveillance, Lancaster County out of Nebraska had obtained warrants for Mr. Guatney.
And we picked up Guatney on the day he was leaving. He had his bag packed and was heading for the railroad tracks.
Hey, heads up, our man's on the move.
I think you're right, Jim, he's got his bedroll.
Well, let's get him. Terry, bring the car. William Guatney, there's some men at the Sangamon County Sheriff's Department that would like to talk to you. Would you be willing to go with us and speak with them?
Talk to him.
After we brought Guatney to the Sangamon County Sheriff's Department, our first plan was to conduct a polygraph examination of Guatney. We had no idea what the reaction would be, what the outcome would be.
Detectives Don Benassi and Jim Conover of the Pekin Police Department, along with the rest of the investigators, anxiously await the results of the polygraph examination of William Freight Train Gwatney.
Harry, do you think Gwatney is mentally capable of being polygraphed?
Oh yes, he's very capable. I administered test questions before the ones that are pertinent to your case. He passed them all with flying colors. I even threw in some trick questions.
Harry, what's your opinion on the answers he gave for the Pekin case?
He showed deception in all of my questions. In fact, in the Pekin case, the normal case, Riverton, Topeka, Kansas, Omaha, Nebraska, and Lincoln, Nebraska. He showed deception in all of these answers.
After receiving these results, we decided to try and interrogate him. Our plans was if he complained about being tired, or if there was any health problems, we would cater to every need that he wanted. Well, Gwatney soon learned that if he said he had a headache, could get him out of the interrogation. So we kind of took it careful with him. Every time he said a headache, he had a headache, we'd give him come up some aspirin and let him go rest for a couple hours.
Gwatney, you remember us interviewing you up in Lincoln?
Yes, sir.
We'd like to talk to you about Jason Suber and John Simpson.
Yeah, the two young boys were killed at the state fair.
And so then they took turns. Everybody, including the state's attorneys from Tazewell County, McLean County, interrogated William Gwatney, and they all come out with the same answer. He did it to all these young boys, except we can't get a confession.
Bill, I'm Lieutenant Don Benassi of the Pekin, Illinois Police Department. Have you ever been to Pekin, Illinois?
I've been there several times.
How do you get there?
Usually by a train.
Have you ever been to the 4-H fair in Pekin?
Yes, sir.
Were you there in 1976?
I spent some time there then.
Tell me about Mark Helmig, 9-year-old boy you met while you were there.
He was a nice boy, but I didn't kill him. I pray and hope I'm not the guy.
Bill, this is Ron Dozier, the McLean County State's Attorney. What's going on, Bill?
About that little boy in Pekin. He was a nice little boy. I didn't want him to die.
Where did you see this little boy?
In the park by the railroad tracks.
Did you talk to him?
Oh, yeah. He was a nice little boy. I bought him some candy.
What kind of candy, Bill?
Licorice, but I didn't kill him.
Then tell me about him, Bill.
I saw this guy, and when I tried to stop him, he had a rope around his neck.
Bill, can you tell me what this guy looked like?
I never saw him.
Well, how do you know he done it if you never saw him?
I seen him, but I tried to stop him, but I couldn't stop him. I didn't want that little boy to die. He was a nice little boy. I just couldn't stop him.
When it became my turn to interrogate Gwatney, I mainly concentrated my interrogation on the murder in Normal and any details that he might know that had never been released or that was not known by the public. I showed him a picture of Marty Lancaster, the picture that I mentioned before of him standing near his bicycle with the stringer, fishing stringer hanging on the handlebars and with the same shirt on that he was killed with.
Sergeant Dan Sadler, I'd like to talk to you about a young boy whose body we found in that hangout that you're hanging out in around your town.
Okay.
His name is Marty Lancaster. Do you remember meeting up with him?
Maybe. I don't remember.
Maybe this will help you remember. We found his body near a bunch of telephone poles piled up out there. 1978.
I had a boy on a bicycle there, but I didn't kill that boy. I didn't kill any boys.
Did you see anything on that bicycle?
Yeah, there was a fish stringer.
We found that fish stringer, Bill. It was used to tie up the boy's hands. Did you kill that boy?
I did not kill that boy. I didn't kill any boys.
Guatney stated he recognized the boy, he had seen him, he had talked with him, and yes, he was in Normal during the first part of July of 1978. And he stated that he never did anything to the boy and started to go back into the excuse of more or less of there was a good Bill and a bad Bill. Good Bill was the Bill that we were talking with, and that he was always good to boys, he treated them well, and that he thought there might be a bad Bill following him that might in fact be doing these bad things that he referred to these boys.
He really liked this Mark Helmick kid, and the one in Pekin, he'd say. He was really good. And he said, I tried to help him, but bad Bill got to him first, and I couldn't stop him.
If in fact we are talking about a true multiple personality disorder here, I don't know if he was ever felt that this was the same person, or if he remembered what happened, or if this was just an excuse. It was beyond our capability of knowing. We didn't have the knowledge, psychological knowledge, to know that. But the more we pressed him, the more adamant he became about ever harming any of the boys or anything. Our one thought was, okay, if he's the good Bill and the bad Bill is killing the boys, what is triggering the bad Bill? So we thought maybe if we could make him mad, we would see the bad Bill come out and maybe see what had happened or how he reacted to being mad. No matter what we tried, we could never make William Guatney mad. He always stayed very calm and collected and cool. Never ever got mad. Only had a headache and needed to go lie down.
During the interview that I conducted with William Guatney, we talked about the case that was prevalent in Sangamon County. It was on Robbie Mann, and Mr. Guatney was provided a photograph of Robbie Mann, and he vehemently denied the fact that he'd ever seen that boy, and added to it, which I thought was kind of a strange response, in that the train doesn't stop there. So he seemed to be familiar with the area that we were discussing enough that he knew that the train had tracks there, crossed the river bridge, but did not stop.
Mr. Gauntney, my name is Terry Castleman, and I'm the detective sergeant with the Sangamon County Sheriff's Office. What do you go by, Mr. Gauntney? What's your name?
Call me Freight Train or Bill.
I'm going to talk to you today about a case. I'm not going to involve a lot of other things, but I want to talk to you about a case. A young man named Robbie Mann. He was found stomped to death underneath a railroad track, and I thought you might have seen him on the tracks.
No, I didn't know that boy. I couldn't hurt anyone. I know I didn't kill any of those boys.
Are you sure you've never seen this boy, Bill?
No, I've never seen him. The train doesn't even stop there.
Bill, tell me about what happened to that boy in Topeka, Kansas. Do you remember?
That boy followed me outside the bowling alley. He was calling me a bum and a tramp.
Did you hit that boy?
Well, some of them kids are pretty good with their fists. But I was just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
What about those two boys out in Lincoln, Nebraska?
That lady with that dog did not see me kill those two boys.
What did she see, Bill?
She didn't see nothing. I don't know what she saw.
And I think I was the last person to interrogate him. He was shrewd, he was wise, he was street smart. He'd been arrested 70 different times for minor offenses and other things.
Bill, I'm Jim Conover of the Pekin, Illinois Police Department. You know where Pekin is?
Yes, I've been there.
You okay? You need to go back to your cell and rest a little bit, or you want to talk to me later?
Talk to you now if you let me smoke a cigarette.
No problem there. Smoke away.
I want to tell you something.
What do you want to tell me, Bill?
I did not kill those kids.
Why do you want to tell me that?
Because I'm not going to admit to it.
Okay, well, were you back in Pekin in 1976?
Yes, I was.
Did you steal some wine from a church there?
That I'll admit to. That's better than killing somebody, ain't it?
You ever been to Omaha, Nebraska, Bill?
Yes, I've been there.
You know what a treehouse is, Bill?
I know what you're gonna say.
What am I gonna say?
I did not kill those kids.
Bill, you were in a VA hospital in Wadsworth, Kansas back in 1976, is that right?
Yes.
And you left that hospital and came back there later, is that right?
I left there, I went and got drunk.
Did you go to Omaha, Nebraska while you were out?
Yes.
Remember going back to the VA with a bug bite?
Went back there to get treated for that. I was just there a short time, a day or so.
And you don't remember what you were doing or where you were on the 23 days you were out?
I was drunk. I was drunk.
After all the departments that were present ended their interrogation without any success of an admission, the warrants from Lincoln, Nebraska was served on William Gwatney, and the following morning he was transported back to Lincoln, Nebraska after a court hearing. In the subsequent weeks and months, Gwatney was tried for those crimes in Lincoln, Nebraska, and found incompetent to stand trial due to his mental capability.
I knew that he killed Mark Helmick. I knew he killed Marty Lancaster. I knew he killed the young boy up in Topeka, Kansas, the two boys in Lincoln, Nebraska, and another one in Omaha, Nebraska. I knew that when I walked out of that room.
Gwatney was remanded to a mental treatment facility in Lincoln, Nebraska, who later transferred him to Wisconsin. And at that point, we kind of lost touch with Gwatney until all at once we heard that he had walked away from the facility in Wisconsin.
That's where the case kind of ended at, except that he kept walking away from the place. And we'd pick him up here, we'd pick him up in Springfield, and we'd take him back to the institution. Until at one time, he was caught molesting a young 9-year-old girl. Changed his MO altogether. And this time he was sentenced to an institution in Kansas, just outside of Topeka, Kansas. And that's where he ended his life at out there. He eventually died in that institution.
There was never any doubt in my mind after the interrogation and all the circumstantial evidence that was developed during the investigation, that Gwatney was responsible for not only Marty Lancaster, but several of them. It was difficult to put your finger on the number, but based upon our interrogation, our information, I'm sure he was responsible for the Helmick boy in Pekin and Marty Lancaster in Normal.
So that was a case where we had our suspect. We did all the work into it. We knew he killed these young boys. We wanted an arrest. We did not get an arrest. We got an arrest, but we didn't get a conviction. And in law enforcement, a conviction is the most satisfying thing there is to any of the investigators who work those cases. Being declared incompetent to stand trial is one of the things that just disappoints everybody. But there are cases which are true cases that they probably are incompetent to stand trial.
But there's one important thing to remember. After Gwatney was picked up at the Springfield, Illinois State Fair, we never had any of what we consider to be any of the serial murders of young teenage or pre-teenage boys after that along the railroad tracks. All those homicides stopped.